This is Ozarks at Large inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. To my left, Three Penny Acre.
Hi.
Hey, Kyle.
Hey, Kyle.
Would you like to start with a song?
Let's do it.
We would love to.
This is a Steve Earle tune called Pilgrim, and it's featured in Sundown Town.
Beautiful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's Baird, Bernice, and Brian from Three Penny Acre. As you mentioned before that song, this is featured in Sundown Town.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
This is something new for Three Penny Acre. You are in, on stage, in a play.
Yes, it is. Very new.
We're actually more than on stage. We're in a barn loft. So we're like above stage.
Yeah, we have the bird's eye view of the stage.
So once you get up there in that loft, you're there for the run of the play?
For the duration.
We're there.
Unless
Baird falls out of the loft.
We hope he does not.
This is something that's quite different for a band, because when you were promoting Highway 71, you would go from town to town to town, different venue, different place you were sleeping every night. Now you're sleeping in your own beds, and you're coming to the same place for several nights in a row.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic.
It's a whole new concept.
Yeah.
It's like touring in your own town, you know, night after night after night. But yeah, you get your own bed, which is kind of cool.
And you've been going to the rehearsals.
Mm-hmm.
What's that like? What's a rehearsal like for Theater Squared?
Well, Theater people rehearse a lot more than musicians.
It's true.
Yeah, we're keeping very long rehearsal hours.
Which is unusual for us.
Well, you know, we amass kind of a body of music over years, you know, and we can, we kind of work up a song maybe in a night, and we'll introduce it at the next night's show or something. But then in this context, you know, you're working on blocking and dialogue and how the music cues in, and you know, and music cues in a concert are different than music cues in a play, you know, and yeah. So we're learning the ropes on that, but it's many, many hours.
Or coordinating with a singer that's 20 feet away from you.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Because you're also acting, you sing some songs, but then you're also sort of the band that performs music that's sung by members of the cast.
That's right.
We actually have no singing of Three Penny Acre while we're in this play. We are literally kind of the backup band for the show.
Chorus.
So we only sing when the chorus is in and we sing along with them. Yeah. So that's a different concept for us as well, is that we're a backup band for someone else who's on stage, like Baird said, 20 feet in front of you, and you're trying to get it all together. So that has been new for us.
Yeah. Has it been new for any of the cast members? Have they? Are there
oh,
any?
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Everybody.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Yeah.
It's new ground for everybody involved.
It's like we woke up and our voices were hoarse and we said, Kyle, why don't you come out on the road and be our lead singer?
Oh wow.
And, you know, and so you got to spend some time massaging that and getting used to that. And in this instance, there are nine lead singers.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so there's not one main vocalist that takes a lot of the solos. There are solos, I think, from almost every character.
Yeah.
You know, and then chorus, big chorus numbers. Mm-hmm. So whereas we're used to three-part harmony, you get nine-part harmony on top of our music. It's really unique.
Safe to say this got you out of your comfort zone?
I'd say that's safe to say.
A little bit. But we're actually having a lot of fun with
it. Yeah, it's going great.
It's good. It's good to get out of your comfort zone, right?
It is. Maybe not all the time.
It's not all the time.
but yeah.
Yeah, it's been great for us. We're learning a lot about the way our music fits into the outside world and the way it can be incorporated into this play. It's been fascinating.
Do you think this experience will change at all how you play, how you write, how you perform?
That's a fantastic way to bring in this idea that Brian's had. When they first approached us about this play and told us what it was about, it was pretty powerful because Brian has this song that kind of sums up in a part a really big subject matter from this play. And so it really hit our hearts because we were so deep involved in this song that Brian was writing and just in the research of doing that song. And it just all surfaced at the same time. And so it was just meant to be for many reasons. Mm-hmm. And it really has shed a lot of light on the song for Brian to think about turning this into a whole new project just from this one song.
Yeah, you know, we write all these story songs, and the play is forcing us to think more of it as a character singing than as a balladeer telling the tale. And that, I think, changes maybe a little bit of the way that we approach a tune. And so that's been interesting to me.
I keep thinking back on a bunch of our songs and being like, any one of them could make a pretty neat play.
Yeah,
Of them,
you know?
Yeah, it's true.
It makes us reflect on what we've written and realize, wow, there's a character there, you know.
Dust Bowl stuff.
Right. This play, of course, is about race relations in a sundown town, which was a town where if you were a person of color, you shouldn't be.
That's right.
After sunset.
And the song that Bernice mentions that I'd just written a song. I grew up in Tulsa, and I'd just written a song about the 1921 Tulsa race riot. And so I'd written this song, and then within a couple of weeks, Theater Squared approached us and said, we've got this concept for this race, you know, play, you know, based in 1918 Arkansas.
Wow.
You know, and so that's what she meant. It really hit home. It seemed like we had really been delving into that matter. We should play that song.
That would be wonderful.
This is a song that we have not recorded, and it seems to fit the theme of the play, but it's not in the play.
Have your coffee ready.
So in 1921 in Tulsa, it was basically a 36-hour period. It was the bloodiest race riot in U.S. history. And at the time, the community there, the African-American community in Tulsa, was the most affluent African-American community in the nation. And after that 36 hours was over, 35 square blocks of that community was burned to the ground. So I always preface this song in explaining, imagine... And this is an issue, you know, as Americans, we don't have this in our kind of conscience. We don't know automatically, you don't think about this Tulsa moment. But imagine 1921 Harlem burned to the ground. the entirety of Harlem. And so that's kind of what I have in my mind, and I think we would all know that story.
The U.S. military firebombed it.
Well, yeah, there are some really outlandish accounts of, you know, World War I planes firebombing over this community in Tulsa. And I mean, it is a really horrific subject. And so, you know, we're maybe just trying to put this back into the American conscious a little bit and put that story out there. So this is called Tulsa 1921.
Rings out in the middle of the night. There's a dead man on Tulsa's north side. But there ain't nobody naming names except a newspaper man with an axe to grind. He says it's real simple, it goes like this: black man gave white woman a kiss. So let's rise up and let's burn him down, 'cause there ain't no room for that in our town. But the truth is, this ain't about an embrace. It's just the age-old struggle to hold down a race. You had your Black Wall Street and millionaire Jews, Native nations worth billions in crude. Yeah, the oil flowed with opportunity thick. There were too many people and they were getting rich. And with some folks that don't sit too well, so one day that axe it fell. Well, the mob crossed Greenwood, Archer bound. They burned the Baptist church as Zion down. They were shooting left and they were shooting right. And the fire blocked the stars in the sky. There was blood in the streets and bodies everywhere. The carnage left 35 blocks bare. And the paper said the dead 23, but there were 500 missing families. And the folks left standing, they split fast. All those dreams they were building reduced to ash. Teachers, doctors, lawyers, and preacher men had seen their fair share of blood and sin. And there was this thing about history that they understood, telling them to leave town while they still could. So if you're in downtown Tulsa and you're looking around, and you see the empty lots where the highways laid down, with all the semis and the cars passing through, you'll know that path was laid by a wrecking crew. And if you cross the tracks that separate that town, there's a mass grave buried in the ground. A disgrace they hid beneath the red dirt clay. And you'll hear nothing but a whisper today.
Wow. It's quite a story.
It is.
Did you learn that? You grew up in Tulsa.
I did.
When did you first hear about that event?
You know, growing up in Tulsa, I was a big Tulsa historian. I was very proud of Tulsa's history. You know, you walk around, you see these very grand buildings that were built during the oil boom, you know, these Art Deco buildings, these beautiful churches. And so I was really into that. And I would, you know, I'd walk downtown. It's now restored. You could see the Mayo Hotel. And it's now this beautifully restored hotel. And, you know, back in the day, it was like the epicenter of the world. During that time period, Tulsa had the busiest airport in the world. You know, people were coming in droves. It was really this economic center. So I got into that. And then as you start delving into that, there's an underbelly to it. And unfortunately, unfortunately, it's not really exposed. Or at the time, it wasn't. You know, this is in the late '80s, early '90s, and then mid '90s, early into the late '90s. Finally, there were legislative inquiry into the race riot, and there were talks of reparations, and they were really trying to dig into this. And so there was a lot of information coming out. And there were some really tough discussions about it, and it just stuck with me, you know, and it was really a tough subject to chew on. So I say, you know, that song took me 15 years to write. It was implanted in me, you know, when I was a teenager, and it took a long time for it to come out. And, you know, and it's one of those things where, you know, I love Tulsa, and at the same time there's this tension, and you know, it's come a long way. They now have dedicated a small little park.
Mm. They just did that last year. Or
yeah,
this year?
just this year, just a couple months ago, and you know, but there are some really interesting stories. The highway literally runs through what was Greenwood, which was this community, and there was a very famous African American surgeon, and if you go under the highway, you would find where his house was.
Wow.
And the story is he was shot down in his front yard, you know, and so there are these stories that just as a kid, you know, it haunted me because like you have a pride for where you're from. But then if you learn that other side of it, you're in conflict,
which I think is perfect for the Sundown Town story as well. Everyone takes pride in where they're from. And then there's this other side to the land that you're from that is maybe not so full of pride, and you can't swallow it very easily.
But it's better if the full story is eventually known.
Yeah, once you tell that story and get it out and have a conversation.
It's like making peace.
Yeah, you've made peace with it.
Exactly. Yeah, I think some people will definitely squirm in their seats a little bit with Sundown Town, and that's why it was written. I mean, it's definitely supposed to make you feel uneasy about some things that have happened, and the music in it really stirs that in you. And
Kevin Coey, the playwright, said he had the music first and then built the story around it. Is there truth that you're going to have some vinyl?
Yes, we are.
Soon?
We are. You know, one of the ideas that we had was we would kind of take our variation on a couple of these tunes. So, you know, earlier we played Pilgrim, and that's our version. It's actually sung by one of the actors. The character's name is Old Scratch. But we decided to put out a couple of tunes, and one of them is this traditional number, God's Gonna Cut You Down. And that's gonna be the side A off of a vinyl that we're releasing. And the side B is gonna be a cut off of Highway 71, our most recent album, and it's Sonny Brown, which is another one of our tunes that fits into the theme. So it'll be kind of a commemorative vinyl, you know, something that people can take home. And you know, I play vinyl all the time, but you know, if they wanna play it, they can. But it'll just be something that kind of commemorates this collaboration.
Where will the vinyl be available?
At the show.
At the show.
We're actually releasing it at the show.
Oh my God.
We're going to have a little merch table, you know, and you'll have a chance to buy the vinyl there. And you can also purchase tickets. We're going to do a finale concert. And so you could purchase tickets to that concert. And, you know, we're just trying to make it, even though we're not singing all the tunes, we're trying to come in and have Three Penny Acre, what we do, be a part of it in some way.
And then later in the summer, the Roots Festival coming
back?
That's
right. Yeah, hopefully we'll come back and talk a little bit more about it. We're going to have the second annual Fayetteville Roots Festival. We had a great success this first year, and we're going to do it again. But we're going to do a three-day festival. And we're going to make it a little bigger and better. Same flair, though, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We've got a lineup we're working on, and we'll release that really soon.
Baird, Bernice, Brian, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kyle.
Thanks, Kyle.
As always.